Continuing with Canto 2, Chapter 4. This evening we'll be covering texts 10 and 11. The process of creation. Both 10 and 11 are the verses are focusing on the qualification of Shukadev Goswami. The second verse is his internal processing of this exchange with Maharaj Parikshit. He's not only supplying answers to questions like information, he's deeply absorbed. So it describes how he absorbs himself and what's internally happening with Shukadev Goswami. And his summation of the conclusions of the Vedic scriptures in the matter of creation. So text 10 reads, this is Maharaj Parikshit speaking. It ends a series of questions. Kindly clear up all these doubtful inquiries, because you are not only vastly learned in all the Vedic literatures and self-realized in transcendence, but also a great devotee of the Lord, and are therefore as good as the personality of Godhead. So there's several parts to this. His qualification in learning, his qualification in realization of that which he's learned, his qualification as a devotee, and because of the quality of his devotion, he's so dear to the personality of Godhead, he's as good as the Lord elevates him to that position, as good as me. Those four things. The first paragraph of the purport, I'm going to go through the whole purport, it's very nice. The first paragraph is a summary or a paraphrase of a verse from Brahma Samhita. And let's see if you can pick out which verse it is. In the Brahma Samhita it is said that the absolute truth, Govinda, the personality of Godhead, although one without a second, is infallibly expanded. He's one without a second, but he's infallibly expanded in innumerable forms, not different from one another. And although he is the original person, he is still ever young with permanent youthful energy. He is very difficult to know simply by learning the transcendental science of the Vedas, but he is very easily realized by his pure devotees. Advaitam achutam anadim anantarupam adyam puranam purusham navayovanam cha Pideshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhakto govindamadi purusham tamaham rajami. So just this past weekend I was requested by some devotees to explain the meanings of the verses of Brahma Samhita. We didn't get too far, but it's nice meditation. Advaitam, non-dual. Achyutam, he never becomes fallen. The living entity is chuta and he is achyuta, infallible. You mean different varieties of infallible. His will is infallible. whatever he wills, unstoppable. Advaitam achutam anadim, he has no beginning. Anantarupam, although he is anadim, he's one without a second, he has infallibly expanded by innumerable forms. Dvaitam achutam anadim anantarupam adyam, he's adi and he's anadi. That's good. Adyam puranam purusham yovanamja, he's the oldest person and yet he's ever youthful. He's this very contrary personality. The oldest person that's ever youthful. Then Vedeshu Durlabham, which is the reason Prabhupada is quoting, is because simply through the study of the Vedas, he's not approachable. Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakto. He's very knowable, very easily known through the medium of bhakti. Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakto Govindamadi Purusham. So Krishna isn't knowable just by being a learned Vedic scholar. I know a number of people very learned in Vedic wisdom that don't really understand Krishna. They don't have a clue about Krishna. They don't even understand, some of them don't even understand about the soul. When Prabhupada was invited by the leading professor of the Department of Indology at the University of Moscow, famous event, Professor Katovsky had sent a letter of invitation. Well, there's some detail to that. Prabhupada was writing to a number of people to get, you know, into the Iron Curtain, because in order for, as an Indian citizen, if he had a letter of invitation. So he was in Hawaii. And when he got the reply from the Indology professor, Katovsky, saying, "Oh, Swamiji, it would be very nice if you could come." So Prabhupada took it. This is a letter of invitation. Go to the visa office right away and apply for a visa to Moscow. And they said, "But Prabhupada, he's just being cordial." And go to the Moscow, go to the Russian embassy right now and make an application. But Prabhupada, it's January. You know how cold it is in Moscow, and now here in Hawaii, it's mango season. We know how much you like mangoes. And Prabhupada said, "There is no sweeter mango than preaching in the Iron Curtain the message of Krishna. Go once to the embassy and get the visa." So he got the visa. And when he reached Moscow, Professor Katovsky was a little surprised, but Swami, he showed up. "Thank you very much. I'll be arriving on such and such flight." And in their personal discussions, this is, you know, University of Moscow is, it's up there as far as names of universities, certainly in Russia, and even, you know, it's like the Sorbonne of Russia. It's the elite university. And here's the head of the department telling Prabhupada, "Swamiji, after this body is finished, everything is finished." Not even understanding the soul. You know, hello. Hanyate Hanyamani Sharire, Professor Katovsky, what about Bhagavad Gita 101? Professor, PhD, head of the department, not even knowing about the soul. But to speak of the purpose of the Vedas. Vedaish Jasaya Fire Aham Eva Vedyo Vedanta Krit, Veda Vid, Eva Chaham. Not so difficult. The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. So, but Vedeshu Durlabham. Just by studying the Vedas, it's very difficult. Ad Durlabham, Ad Mabhakto. So, second paragraph. The expansions of different forms of the Lord as from Krishna to Baladev to Sankarshan, from Sankarshan to Vasudev, from Vasudev to Aniruddha, Aniruddha to Pradyumna. So he's probably giving us the Vedic declension of expansions. Krishna expands as Balaram. Balaram as Mahasankarshan. Mahasankarshan expands as the rest of the chapter of Yuha. Vasudev, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. And then the second Sankarshan. And from the second Sankarshan, Narayan of Vaikuntha. And from Narayan of Vaikuntha expands another, because in the Vaikuntha realm, they also have the Chaturvyuha forms. So they're there. Then from that second Sankarshan expands the Purusha avatars. Purusha avatars are for the purpose of creation, which is what this subject is about, process of creation. And innumerable other forms, which are compared to the constant flowing of the uncountable waves of a river, and are all one and the same. I mean, the waves of the river are not the same. Each wave is a different wave, but they're all water, all the same substance. So the forms of the Supreme, they manifest differently, like different waves manifest differently, but they're all of the same substance. They're all Vishnu Tattva, the same. You understand that term, tattva. They're all the same reality, they're not jiva tattva, they're not shakti tattva, they're not shiva tattva, they're Vishnu tattva. They're in that same category. They're all the same category. All one and the same. They are like lamps of equal power which kindle from one lamp to another. That is the transcendental potency of the Lord. Then Prabhupada makes a scriptural quote to support that statement. The Vedas say that he is so complete that even though the whole complete identity emanates from him, he still remains the same complete whole. Ishopanishad invocation. Om Purnam Adat Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnameva Vishishate quotes. Remains the complete balance. So 1 minus 1 equals 1. Krishna, the Supreme One, manifests an equal form as himself, another one, and he remains complete. Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnameva Vishishate. As such, there is no validity in a material conception of the Lord as produced by the mental speculator. Or, going back to what we discussed this morning, Eko Bahu Sham, remember? From one becomes many. The piece of paper example, ripping the piece of paper into little pieces and strewing it about the floor. We wouldn't do that, Krishna. But if we were to do that, then the original paper is gone because it's now distributed. But this is 1 minus 1 equals 1. Transcendental math. The Supreme One can expand himself because he's unlimitedly potent and he's not reduced, not even a little. That's how complete. From the mental platform, take your mind. Try to picture in your mind something that's so big, even you take away a little something, and it still remains exactly the same. There is no such thing that the mind can conceive of, because you take even a little something, however big that something is, it's less that much. But what is that something? You complete another something, and it's unchanged. It's inconceivable. It's beyond conception of the mind. The realm of spirit cannot be approached by the mind, which is another Brahma Samhita verse, which says, if you were to build a vimana, a really fast plane that could travel as fast as the wind, supersonic, or as fast as the mind, supramana. And how fast the mind can travel? Think of some family member back in India, and immediately the mind is there. That's how fast the mind can travel. So get a vimana that travels that fast and travel for millions and millions and millions and millions of years, and the spiritual realm is still beyond it. Bhagavatam, or excuse me, Brahma Samhita teaches. Because it's in another dimension that cannot be touched by the mind. It's a subtler dimension. That's why it cannot be reached. Vayoratabhi manaso munipungavanam. By vayu or manas, that fast. So, the Eko Bahusham says you take the one and the one becomes many. So that's the material conception is, it's gone. And so the goal, what's the goal? Become one. Become God. I like that philosophy. I've always wanted to be God. I just couldn't figure out how to do it. Just become one. Whatever that is. I just have to figure out how to become one. But there's no question of becoming God. God doesn't lose his godhood. Or you don't become God. You don't become the Supreme. That's cheating. That's big time cheating. So there's no validity in a material conception of the Lord produced by the mental speculator. Vedeshu durlabham. Even by studying the Vedas. Thus he remains always a mystery for the mundane scholar, even if he is vastly learned in the Vedic literatures. Therefore, the Lord is beyond the limit of conception for mundane learned scholars, philosophers, or scientists. But adurlabham atma bhakto. He is easily understandable for the pure devotees, because the Lord declares in the Bhagavad Gita, so here's some more evidence, that after surpassing the stage of knowledge, when one is able to be engaged in devotional service of the Lord, then only can one know the true nature of the Lord. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. One can know Krishna through devotion only, and not through study. However smart, however big your IQ is, or however many exams you've passed, it doesn't matter. You can't. That's not a qualification for knowing Krishna. In fact, it can be a disqualification because it may make the heart hard. Hard can become hard as stone. One cannot have any clear conception of the Lord or his holy name, form, attributes, pastimes, etc., unless one is engaged in his transcendental loving service. That's scriptural statements, not just somebody's opinion. And to enter into that realm of bhakti, somebody that's very learned might have a hard time doing this, but they have to surrender to Krishna. I don't want to do that. Being freed from all other engagements. means that one must become a pure, unconditioned devotee of the Lord. Then only one can know him by the strength of devotional service. So notice the symmetry between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada has described, you may sometime be asked this question here in Midwest. How does this Vedic knowledge compare to Christianity? Or they'll say it differently, do you accept Christ, and do you accept the Bible? And the simple answer that Prabhupada gave, speaking to a Western audience, was yes. In the Pocket Dictionary, the words are the same and the meanings of the words are the same. And when you go to the Webster Standard Collegiate Oxford Dictionary, the words are the same plus some more words, plus the meanings are more expanded. Dictionary. It's not different meanings, not different words. But the more complete explanation. Simple comparison. So yes, we accept the Bible, Vedas, and we accept that Prabhupada spoke many times. Christ was a pure devotee of the Lord. And he taught that one should love God with all your heart and mind and strength. Same teaching. Now, how great is God and how to love God and how to best express that? The process of creation, for example. The Bible teaches there's a process of creation. And it's the principle is the same. Far more detailed, elaborate explanation found in the Vedas. I mean, because I grew up in that tradition, I can tell you for a fact, far more elaborate, far more satisfying explanation than God said, let there be light, and so there was. Okay? God said that there be this and that, and so there was. Which is true. It's by his Ichha Shakti, he desires something, and avati, or voila, there it is. Okay, can you do that a little slower? What's the voila? How does it work? And that's what Maharaj Pariksit is asking. Through his energies, he creates. That I understand and accept. Could you describe how that takes place? Can you unpack that statement, voila, or avati? How does it happen? So, there's, and that understanding is there in Bhagavad Gita with more detail, and then the Bhagavatam is like the graduate study. That's the comparison Prabhupada has given us. The undergraduate, graduate, and then there's the postgraduate. That's Chaitanya Charitamrita. So there's nice symmetry between undergraduate and graduate study. And we're kind of moving a little bit back and forth between the two, so you can see how that symmetry works. New paragraph. Maharaj Pariksit admitted in the previous verse that the Lord is inconceivable even for the greatest learned scholars. He said that. We also discussed Vedeshu Durlabham. By great scholar, he's not accessible. Why then, question, why then should he be again requesting Shukadeva Goswami to clarify his insufficient knowledge about the Lord? If knowledge alone is not enough, why ask for more knowledge? That's a good question. The reason is clear. Not only was Shukadeva Goswami vastly learned in Vedic literatures, but he was also a self-realized soul and a powerful devotee of the Lord. This was stated in the first canto when the sages are speaking to Sutta. Not only you heard the conversation, because in the audience when Shukadeva was speaking to Maharaj Pariksit, many sages were hearing. One of those sages was Sutta, and he had, you know, his receiver dish was high volume. He was really tuned in to hearing the message. But not only he heard the message, but he assimilated the message by realization. So Vasuta was realized, this is an important qualification, at least to a certain degree, we should speak from our realization. We can speak the words of the previous authorities, that's also appropriate, but as one can speak from realization, it's even more powerful. And that's Shukadeva Goswami's qualification. He's learned, he's realized, he is a great devotee. A powerful devotee of the Lord, by the grace of the Lord, is more than the Lord himself. What? How is that? He gives examples. Ramchandra had to build a bridge, but Hanuman just flew over the ocean. Who's greater? So, Ram empowered Hanuman to do what he himself apparently could not do. He just orchestrates things to glorify his devotees in ways like that. Or Durvas Muni, when he came to Sveta Dweep and appealed to Lord Vishnu, please protect me. What did Lord Vishnu say? I can't do anything without the sanction of my devotee. I'll have to go to my devotee, and if he says okay, then it's okay. He's the boss. Because the Lord is such a loving person, this is the key principle. Because his nature is loving, when his devotee extends love, the Lord subordinates himself to that love. He's the supreme independent. He doesn't need anybody's anything. And with the fullness of that independence, he places himself dependent and places his devotee above him. So he had to go to Maharaj Ambarish, oh, please help me, okay. But what was the mentality or the spirit of Maharaj Ambarish? Maharaj Ambarish offered prayers to Sudarshan Chakra and then said to Sudarshan Chakra, if there have been any and all pious activities I have performed in my life, I hereby transfer all of them to Durvas Muni so that he can be protected by those pious activities. Then this is after Durvas Muni tried to kill him, like totally whimsically. It wasn't just an empty, it was a fiery demon that would have killed him had Sudarshan Chakra not interfered. This is the magnanimity of a devotee. Pretty inconceivable. I command you, imagine somebody, what to speak of, you're trying to kill you, just like insulting you so badly. And the devotee comes back, that person comes back later and says, I got this life-threatening situation. Please take all of my pious credits so that they will protect you. Anyway, that's Maharaj Ambarish. And that's the reason why the Personality of Godhead has placed himself in such a way that the devotee is even greater than himself. And one more reference Prabhupada gives is from the Uddhava Gita, which is the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, and Krishna says to Uddhava, but he doesn't say my devotee is greater than me, he says my devotee is one who is fully surrendered to me, I see him as equal to me. There's a statement like this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, where the Lord says like that. One who surrenders unto me at the time of initiation, I accept him to be equal to myself. So, mad bhakta puja bhyadika. My devotee I accept as my equal. That means the unlimited potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead lifts the surrendered devotee to that position. So that a devotee can do amazing things. Want to hear a nice Prabhupada story? In the in London, there was an installation at Bury Place, which was just a couple blocks away from the British Museum in the heart of downtown London. Somehow the devotees got this place of worship. And they were making an arrangement for an altar to install Radha Krishna deities, Radha Nandineeshwara. And as they were making the final preparations, Prabhupada was there supervising. And they had a stone altar that was propped up by support beams, poles, and there's this heavy marble slab, so heavy that two men couldn't lift it. And as they were moving the deities in place to go on this, on the altar, the base of the deities hit one of these columns, and this stone piece overhanging the deities started to fall. And Prabhupada was very short, so he immediately jumped up, you know, to lift it. More than two men were required. Prabhupada stood there and held it up in the air himself while they put the support beams back in place. Like Superman or something. He's little and old. But, you know, he was serving Radha and Krishna, and he held up that piece of stone until they put the columns back. When they put the columns back up, they looked at each other like, what just happened? Krishna was in danger because of our inattentiveness. And Prabhupada saved them. The deities would have gotten crushed. But now with Prabhupada there. So, strength beyond what is a normal person's capacity, or abilities that are beyond an ordinary person's abilities. Where does ability come from? From the same person who can take it away. Our ability to do well in school. Ability to walk. Ability to blink our eyelid. Ability to digest our food, or, you know, voluntary and involuntary things. Ability comes from the same place. And devotion is just recognizing that fact and taking those things that we received and offering them with, like, palmfuls of Ganges back to the Ganges. Taking that which, those endowments of this human form of life given to us by God, and offering them to God in His service. With full understanding of who He is. Why we should do that. Not just because it's pious to do that, or I get some points, I'll get more stuff, I get more punya credits in my punya account. Not like that. It's an act of devotion. When someone sees Krishna like that, Krishna elevates the devotee equal to, or in some cases, apparently at least. I mean, Hanuman's not going to say, I'm better than Ram, look at this, he has to build a bridge. But Hanuman is empowered. Clearly empowered. The conclusion is, therefore, that a serious devotee must first approach a spiritual master who not only is well versed in the Vedic literatures, but is also a great devotee, with factual realization of the Lord and His different energies. Conversely, without the help of such a devotee spiritual master, one cannot make progress in the transcendental science of the Lord. And a bona fide spiritual master like Shukadeva Goswami does not speak about only the Lord's internal potencies, like, you know, Rasa Leela and all that nice stuff, but right away he's speaking about His external potencies and how the Lord moves His external potencies to make creation. And it's not less interesting or less important or less attractive, because it's an activity of the Lord, in this case, for the sake of the conditioned souls. then the final paragraph repeats the same idea. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, great Acharya, offers his good counsel to the interested Vaishnavas when he says that they should not be interested only in hearing about the Lord's activities like Rasa Leela, but must be keenly interested in his pastimes, in the features of the Purusha avatars, in connection with Srishti Tattva. What's that? The creative function. Srishti means creation. Srishti Tattva. How does it work? We should become, before attempting to go to what's called by some higher topics, before even considering like that, be very familiar with the Lord's lotus feet. Make sure you're right in the right place, in the right mood, and the understanding of how he works with his external energies. Because what's going to happen otherwise is you'll be caught by those external energies, thinking in some way that they're apart from the Lord when they're directly under his control and direction. And that ends Maharaj Pariksit's questions. Now Shukadeva Goswami begins to speak. Well, actually, he doesn't speak yet. He first internalizes. He looks within himself. When Shukadeva Goswami was thus requested by the king to describe the creative energy of the personality of Godhead, he then systematically remembered the master of the senses, Sri Krishna, and to reply properly, he spoke thus. So, Prabhupada's explanation is a short purport, but very, very important. He says that a devotee, the qualification of a devotee is one qualification. He never thinks that he can do anything independently. Although, he's got all the skill set to do things independently. You follow the distinction? We can all do things. You know, runs, jump rope, skip, hop, you know, go to sleep, eat, run around. We can, you know, go to school, get exam. We can do things. We have the skill set. A devotee is one who never thinks, I can do this independently. Because even the non-devotee can't do it independently. That skill set is given. It's like, you know, the ability to walk. Our motor functions can be taken away like that. And all of a sudden we're paralyzed. I know somebody that just happened to. You know, one day they were fine, the next day they were paralyzed. And went to the hospital, and now that paralysis is gone. But wasn't under their control. And then their ability, their power of locomotion was God-given, and God took it away. I mean, they couldn't even speak, because their muscles in their face were gone. I mean, not operative. So, as they say here in America, hey, like, wake up. Because, so a devotee is one, so Shukadeva Goswami is such a devotee, his thoughts went within, fixed upon the personality of Godhead, knowing, I have the answers to the questions. I have the capacity to respond to this, but I'm not going to act in any way independent of the personality of Godhead. No way. Because he's a devotee. He can't. He's attached. His affection for the Lord is so strong. He'll act. He'll speak. He'll do. And same applies to for us in our practical lives. We should do. It's not a process of being inert. or dumb or numb or thoughtless, mindless robots, but quite the opposite, very conscious and acting from that position, conscious of the Supreme and our relationship with the Supreme and our dependence of the Supreme. They think that they can speak only what they are induced to speak by the Supreme Lord, the Master of the senses. The senses of the individual being are not his own. The devotee knows that such senses belong to the Supreme Lord, and that they can be properly used when they are employed for the service of the Lord. So, two little anecdotes to illustrate this. Something that I remember long ago as a kind of young devotee, I had the responsibility to organize those who would go out and distribute books every day at that Sankirtan leader service. And one of the devotees was a graduate from Yale University, and just after his graduation he received the Bhagavad Gita and he was very excited and came to the temple and right away became a devotee. So he was one of the Sankirtan devotees. And as he was reading Bhagavad Gita, he shared with me a question one day when he came back from distributing books by saying, "This verse, I'm not sure how to do it and how to apply it." And in the verse, it says, Krishna says, "Engage in your prescribed duties and always think of me." If I can engage in my prescribed duties, that's nice, I understand that one. And I understand how to think of Krishna. But he doesn't say, do this, and then after some time do that. He says, at the same time, do both. So how do I do that? Which is, you know, how do you go to school? I mean, okay, morning and evening, we're remembering Krishna. And during the day, it's forget Krishna. And it takes your mind on, you know, doing your academic work. Then it's like a sandwich. Remember Krishna, forget Krishna, remember Krishna sandwich. Remember Krishna, forget Krishna, remember Krishna every day. Something must be missing here, because Krishna says, engage in your prescribed duty. He doesn't say, don't do your prescribed duty and always think of me. Engage in your prescribed duty. Some people that don't understand what Krishna consciousness is think, uh-oh, my brilliant son is going to stop performing his prescribed duty. But Krishna doesn't say that. And the teacher of Bhagavad Gita doesn't say that. Stop your prescribed duty and just become Krishna's devotee. Become Krishna's devotee means engage in your prescribed duty and always think of him. How do you put the two together? That's a nice challenge. Practically speaking, it's accomplished over time by becoming attached to Krishna. Like, you know, the obstacles that are standing in the way between us and Krishna are removed, so that you can get a sense that he's there, and maybe even, you know, at least through the eyes of knowledge, see him. At least get a sense that he's there. So by some attachment to him, then where there's attachment to someone, you're always thinking of that someone. That's how you always think of Krishna, engage in your prescribed duties. Practical example that Prabhupada would give is the man who is at his office by the side of his desk. He's got a picture of his family, because he's making this sacrifice, sitting in that awful place, doing that thing he doesn't really like, because of them. He's there because of them. And if he gets a call, oh, so-and-so stubbed her toe. Oh! You know, the thought of family is in the attached family man's mind, because he's attached. He's thinking, of his family members. Practical art. Even perhaps more close to home, young boy, young girl have a romance. And young boy is thinking of young girl. And young girl is thinking of young boy wherever they are. When they're getting up in the morning and eating their breakfast and standing in the shower and supposed to be studying his book, and the girl's on his mind. Because of that attachment. He's, you know, he's not doing his prescribed duties. But while doing one's duties of life, where your heart is, your thoughts are also. That's the idea. So the whole of sadhana bhakti is to cultivate, or more specifically, to reawaken that dormant relationship that's eternally there. Doesn't matter what culture, language, color, race, nation, gender, IQ, all living beings have an eternal relationship with God. The teaching of the Vedas is love of God is within the heart of every living. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunoi. And what brings that out, like striking the match on the matchbox and the fire comes out, what makes that love of God come out? Shravanadi, beginning with hearing, and the rest, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, etc. Padasevanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmadi Vedanam. Processes of bhakti, that which then comes out, Shravanadi, Shuddha Chitte, when consciousness becomes purified. Remember we gave this definition of pure shuddha chitta? I didn't. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gave such a nice definition of pure consciousness. So that pure consciousness is awakened by the process that we're doing right now. Or we do it 4 o'clock in the morning, or we do after chanting, or hearing the Bhagavatam, or worshipping. Hearing and chanting and worshipping and praying and remembering the personality of God. And by practicing, that consciousness comes out, and when that consciousness... So, by performing nice sadhana, it helps us get to the stage where we can perform prescribed duty and always think of Krishna. So another version is fast forward about 30 years, and some time ago somebody in New Jersey was saying, Maharaj, I don't get it. What do you mean, I don't get it? Sadhana I get, but you know, it's right down to I sit down in my cubicle and turn the computer on, you know, I get it. As soon as the computer goes on, I forget all about Krishna, and it's 5 o'clock, and then turn the computer off and remember Krishna again. How to think of Krishna? Same question, different context. Same answer. At least one should have theoretically the understanding that ability comes from God. And the ability to press the button to turn the computer on and everything that follows that is a God-given ability. And let me consider how this ability I can take palmfuls of Ganges and offer it back to the Ganges, how this ability that's God-given, I can use it in His service, at least recognize that it's come from Him. At least say thank you, you know, with genuine gratitude in my heart. Because the fact of the matter is, my mind could go blank. Not only the computer screen. I could just lose my faculties altogether. So, that could happen. It's not under my control. That's how the purport begins. For starters, a devotee never thinks, on my own I can do it. Materialist thinks that way. Not only on my own I can do it, but so much more I'm going to do. I'm going to conquer. I've gotten rid of so many enemies and I'm working on the rest and I've got so much wealth and I'm going to get some more. I'm perfect, powerful, I'm happy. Mm-hmm. So it's, one can say, it's the art of work. Devotion is the art of work, where the activity, not only the activity is regulated by proper conduct, theistic conduct, but more. The fruits are offered to the Supreme, but more. The activity itself is being manifest only because of the mercy of the Supreme. The activity is for the Supreme. Automatically, the fruits are for the Supreme. Theistic conduct is observed, and the entanglements of the reactions of my past fruitive activities is dissolved by that consciousness of working for Krishna, striving through our activities to try to please Krishna. The senses of the individual being are not his own. The devotee knows that such senses belong to the Supreme Lord, Rishikesh, and that they can be properly used when they are employed for the service of the Lord. The senses are instruments, and elements are ingredients, all endowed by the Lord. Therefore, whatever an individual can do, speak, see, etc., is under the direction of the Lord only. Confirmation from Bhagavad Gita 15:15. Sarvasya charmiti sannivishto matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha. No one is free to act freely and independently, and as such, one should always seek the permission of the Lord to act or eat or speak. And by the blessing of the Lord, everything done by a devotee is beyond the principles of the four defects typical of the conditioned soul. If the message here is, if the senses are submitted to the service of the master of the senses, this is from Narada Pancharatha, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate, the definition of what devotional service is. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. There's a prior phrase that goes with that. Sarvopadi Vinirmuktam Tatparatvena Nirmala, meaning where the mind is freed from the conceptions of upadis or designations, that is, you know, of this body. I am American, I am Indian, I am smart, I'm dumb, I'm this many years old, this height, this color here. Fill out any form that asks you who you are. It's all that stuff. Who your parents are, what your dress is, what your phone number, social security number. All in terms of this body. That's who we are. And it's, you know, how many times has it reinforced it? That's who you are. And the devotee is, you know, you're going upstream here. Because there's all this energy that says, no, you're this body. And we're saying, no, we're spirit soul. And the body is an instrument for the service of the master of the senses. Well, where's this master of the senses? Well, he's at Hokusaji. It's beyond this. He's beyond the perception of the senses, but you can experience him by directing your senses to his service. Oh, stop it. Get serious. Be practical. This is practical. This is serious. Because otherwise, the living entity is bewildered by so many conceptions and so many desires and longings and all the things we spoke about this morning. So, this is Shukadeva Goswami is, by example, showing us what's the inside. What goes inside a devotee when acting? And it's, he turns his attention to the Supreme practically. He's asking for blessings, for permission to speak, and then speaks on the Lord's behalf, as he heard from Vyas, and as he has realized, in the mood of humble service. for this wonderful devotee, Maharaj Parikshit. Okay. Any discussion? Feeling lost? Okay. What to do? That's the question? Well, I can give you some feedback from the kids. The kids say, she's the best. Because we got this other one that gives us information, but Jai Radhe, she's the best. So you're feeling one way, you're just giving information, and they're feeling you're giving spiritual vibrancy. So who's right? And that you're trying is, that's a good place to begin. Now, and another point is that we don't trash the intellect. We use it, but like Shukadeva Goswami, he's got the information, but he also has the devotion. I mean, that was attested to by Maharaj Parikshit. Now it's being confirmed by Sutta, who said this is what he did. His consciousness, so it's a cultivation. That's all. And can you or any one of us become better at it? Oh yes. Room for improvement? Lots of room for improvement. But it's not the same as just dry intellectualism. Your platform is not the same. I mean, I'm just you can disagree with me, but that's my statement. It's different. And the recipients of your association feel that. So continue to go to the place, before you come before the children and teach the Sunday school. Pray before you each day as you're chanting. Pray. It's not just chanting. Try to absorb yourself on a spiritual platform with the holy name. The opportunity is there. And you strive like that, Krishna will help. You will advance as a result of that effort and combined with Krishna's help. And it's just through that practice, through that sadhana, it becomes who you are. More and more. I'm not doubting that you struggle. I happen to know that you struggle, but that's okay. It's okay. That sincere effort to reach out to Krishna, however much struggling goes on, that's Krishna will recognize that and reciprocate with that. And that's what the children are experiencing, and others, and so forth. So, a little secret which you already know, but I'll repeat it for your audition and others also. There's this other ingredient. So you're striving to, you know, to whatever degree you're striving to rely upon Krishna, and there's all this other intellectual and mental processing stuff that goes on at the same time, and your efforts are not sufficient to wind all of that down and like push it to the side, and so there's this depending upon descending mercy component that then really makes all the difference. And that's what's being said here in this purport also. Maharaj Pariksit is highly, you know, there are many verses, how qualified Maharaj Pariksit is. Now in the association of Shukadeva Goswami, he's taking full advantage of the Shukadeva Goswami's association. He's downloading that mercy. High speed. And he's assimilating it. And Shukadeva Goswami is ready to deliver because he's absorbed in depending upon Krishna. So that's how the process, that's how one can make advancement. Take the Maharaj Pariksit position and be eager for receiving so that you can go the next step, and go the next step, go, keep going further steps on the path of devotion to Krishna. Yes?
Gopal, you've used the word assimilation many times. Even the last.
Yeah.
What is exactly happening there? In the what is the role of the devotee himself in the assimilation process?
In the submission process?
In the assimilation process. What is the devotee's role? It seems
it's go back to what Jai Radhe said. We are supposed to use our intelligence. We're not supposed to anesthetize it. But in the applying of our intelligence to the receiving of mercy, we're to understand what it is. You know, as much as Krishna gives us the ability to understand, we're to try to understand what it is. And then those tools or the skills or the abilities that Krishna's given us, use them intelligently. So the faculty of intellect is used, but the spirit of devotion is what rules the intellect, in service to Krishna, with a feeling of gratitude and acknowledgement that this is from Krishna, that the mercy is from Krishna, the ability is from Krishna, the service is from Krishna, the access to this whole spiritual realm is just Krishna's mercy. So that's the devotion, the spirit of devotion rules the intellect. And it directs the mind. The intellect directs the mind. Go there. At least in the sadhana stage and in the spontaneous state, the mind is already there. You don't have to direct the mind. Spontaneously, the mind is going. The faculty of attentiveness. So assimilating, another phrase is just, say, you can say internalizing, or I know you could say abiding by, living with. It's not something out there, it's something that you're living with. It becomes an integrated part of your life. You live with it. It's not just, it's like having a friend, but you live with the person. You live with this message of devotion. It becomes assimilated, it becomes part of yourself. There's another component is practice, abhyasa. It's part of the assimilation process. practice in at least to some degree, somewhere, in even in practice, there's some feeling. Like, I want to. And as practice becomes more developed, that feeling also becomes more developed. So assimilation includes feeling. You feel something about that which you're assimilating, about the message of devotion or the way of life of devotion or the teachings of Krishna or something of the holy name, Srimad Bhagavatam. You have feelings for the holy name, for the Srimad Bhagavatam. I can say I'm attached to the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's nice, I like. That's assimilation. It just becomes part of your life. You don't have to like, that's just the seeing things and experiencing things and feeling things in the light of the Bhagavad. Just becomes part of your life. Shrinvanti gayanti grananti sadhavaha. Like your worship of Lord Srinivasa, it's this integral part of your life. You know, there was a time when you weren't doing that, and now you're doing that, and I can imagine that you can't imagine not doing that. It's just part of your life. It's not like marriage. Because the body will be separated from the soul, but this is on the soul platform. The spirit of serving the Lord will go with the soul, even when the body's finished. That is the dimension of assimilation of spiritual life. And same. And there may be a practicing stage where chanting is there, but there's a stage where it's not, you can't not chant. Haridas Thakur said to the Kazi, you can do with me whatever you like. If you think that I've done some sin by becoming, by chanting Krishna's name, then I suggest you punish me. You be fair. You punish me the same way you would punish someone who is a Hindu who became Muslim. Punish equally. But even if you decide the punishment that's fit for me is you cut my body into 1,000 little pieces, I cannot stop chanting Krishna's name. It's coming from the soul. I cannot stop chanting. Do with me as you like. You're asking me to stop chanting Krishna's name. I cannot stop chanting Krishna's name. Do with me what you like. What you feel is appropriate. That's your duty. Perform your prescribed duty. It's not my duty. Your duty. And you take the responsibility for the proper or improper execution. But my duty is calling Krishna's name. Not just duty. I can't stop. So that's assimilation on the soul platform. It starts with, you know, trying to understand at least theoretically, and then out of a sense of duty, at least theoretically, you do. But assimilation goes beyond that. It becomes an inextricable part of one's life. Yeah.
hear topics related to process of creation, Vedic cosmology, should we hear the intention for purification, or should we also have a desire to understand? Because those topics
both. Both purification and trying to understand. Even when you understand, you hear about the soul or hear about the pastimes of the Lord, try to understand. Not try to understand as a material scientist would try to understand, but as the message is being presented by Vyas and the Acharyas are explaining in their commentary, try to understand. Recognize the limit of our intellect, but still try to understand. We use our faculty of intelligence. Recognizing its limitations, we still use it in Krishna service. The distinction is in Krishna service versus speculation. Not that way. That's not in Krishna service. But as the Acharyas explained, try to understand. Bring our faculty of intellect to that audition process. People that are addicted to speculation can't follow what I just said. I've had the experience. But persons that are able to attentively chant, they can understand the difference. Anything else?
Why does a devotee become so compassionate and magnanimous, even to persons who are unfavorable?
Why does a person become compassionate and magnanimous to others, even they're inimical towards him? Would you care to guess? We'll go one direction and say, well, it's not because he's seeing them in terms of the material activity that has been done. Material activity is harsh, insulting, hurtful, mean, cruel, bad. So they don't like that. But then that's not the person. When they can see the person as a spirit soul, how much suffering that person is undergoing. They have to be able to see it, to have that genuinely. There's practice before you're genuinely there, but to have that genuinely, that's actually accepting the person on the platform of the soul. Now, in the Haridas Thakur example, when he was being dragged to the marketplace, beaten with sticks by these really powerful gundas, ministers of justice of the Kazi, the townspeople were, with all of their strength, trying to stop the man from beating him with sticks. He's a sadhu. Can't do this. Stop. Beat me, but don't beat him. But they were so strong, they couldn't stop them. Pleading with them. So a devotee doesn't like to see another devotee, you know, being harmed. But for oneself, that's another thing. Krishna will protect me. Or Krishna can destroy me if he wants, whatever Krishna wants. So the short answer is, seeing on a spiritual platform allows the Vaishnava to be compassionate even to those that are being the opposite to him or her. Yeah. You can't, it's not just putting on a mask. It's from inside. Genuine feelings on the spiritual platform. The person that's behaving like this, they're suffering so much. And even if it's not, they're directly being harmed by another person, the sacrifice of one of the measures, another topic I'm being asked to speak about in Dallas is, what are some of the standard measures for progress in spiritual life, yardsticks for spiritual progress? Now, compassion is one of them. And in one who is genuinely feeling compassion, it's a very strong force in their life, so much so that they literally sacrifice their life for others. Whether there's bad or good or mixed, they're sacrificing their life for others. And those that live their life that way know very well there's not a whole lot of thank yous. There's a lot of grief. Because people in the material world are here because they have an attitude problem towards Krishna or towards God. That's why, like, people in prison are in prison because they're criminals. Otherwise they wouldn't be in prison. They don't have respect for the government or for the laws of the government. Disrespecting the laws of the government, they're put in jail. Well, here we are in the prison house, the place where people go that don't respect the laws of God. Now we're speaking about the laws of God, and the prisoners are saying, hey, get out of here. I'll break your arm, I'll cause you pain. They may not so overtly be like that, but, you know, that happens. But, and that doesn't stop the person that's genuinely feeling. That must do something. Prabhupada speaks it explicitly in his purports. One should expect that when one takes up a life of devotion to God. There are persons in this world that will, because you have done that, they'll want to come and cause you pain. So how does one feel compassion towards that person who's trying to cause you pain? Why are they doing that? They're in such a suffering condition. So it's not always that the response is passive. The response may be something quite different. But if the response is different, still it will come from the place of compassion, not retribution. Oh, yeah? I'll show you. Look at this. Ah. But out of compassion. Like Shrimadeva Goswami. Nice example is Narada cursing the two sons of Kuvera. There's a very insightful section where Narada goes inside and he considers these two boys so shameful. I mean, he wasn't feeling, oh, they've insulted me. He was feeling, how unfortunate. Look at this condition. The sons of Kuvera, look at them. They don't even know they don't have clothes on. Or to speak of standing before a sadhu in that condition. They don't know where they are. All their sense of decency is completely gone. How unfortunate. What to do? What can be done to help them? So, I create a little PowerPoint for this other topic, the leadership, the spiritual dimension, the spiritual perspective. And a leader, a Vaishnava, needs to be, you know, outside the pack, not just, you know, going with the flow, but thinking, considering thoughtfully the circumstances of life, and, okay, here's a circumstance that's come before me. Now, what can I do to bring to this situation some kind of spiritual value to this other individual's life? Because they're obviously missing it, and they're suffering because of it. That's leadership. Not thinking, you know, tit for tat. They're thinking how to myself and the circumstance go into another dimension and, you know, be of some service to this other person. It's a much nicer place than finger pointing, name calling, getting back. Get back mentality. Dhruva's mother said to Dhruva, and Narada said the same thing to Dhruva. Dhruva's mother said to Dhruva, don't think like this about your stepmother. Because one who wishes ill upon the other, another, that very same problem comes back upon the ill wisher. So she may have done you something wrong, but don't be her. Don't wish her ill. To give up that mentality. So, what do you replace that mentality with? Taking the situation, participating in the situation in such a way, there's value added to the life of the other individual. That's leadership. In you know, modern language, it's Vaishnava, in our spiritual language. Serving others to bring them closer to Krishna. Another way of looking at, you know, unfortunate circumstances of life. Udharati, broad-minded. Divrena Bhakti Yogena. Someone else? Yeah.
As in the beginning, the understanding of the Lord is very theoretical. So sometimes it's theoretical.
Theoretical, yes.
Sometimes when difficulty and all comes, so at that time, how to remember the heart?
You hope to remember at least the theoretical part. That's what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. And then what happens?
Remembrance is not...
remembrance doesn't happen. keep trying. So how do you fix up remembrance? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. So it's a little more Shravanam, Kirtanam. Help in the Smaranam department. Right? And it also, if you practice applying Shravanam, Kirtanam, like when nobody's looking, you can go and try to be what that Shravanam Kirtanam says. Or when somebody's looking too. But, you know, practice the message. Take the message and, you know, take it into the laboratory of your life and the real events that happen and see how it works. And that will help the remembrance. So that's like when there's not, you know, some challenge that's coming your way. Just, you know, it's quiet. Practice. Okay, now here comes the challenge. Get your seatbelt fastened. Here comes the challenge. Then you can, you know, you practiced hearing, chanting, you've practiced how to apply this. And you just keep going like that. And it stays. Because purification comes. It's not just... it's not a material thing. It's not just a matter of reconditioning, reprogramming your software. It's awakening the natural consciousness of the soul. So it's very enduring. And that's encouraging. Prabhupada taught us, supposing we stop spiritual life right now and don't do anything more. Whatever it is that we've done, that will stay with us. And the next life, let's say we did 1%. Next life, it's 2%. Or we did 10%. Next life, it's 11%. You just pick up where we left off. You can't say that about material activities. Next life, you're going to have to learn, mathematics and algebra and trigonometry all over again. It's not like, I did that. What's next? Spiritual advancement stays with the soul because it's spiritual. So whatever effort for remembrance, it's worth the effort. It's a good investment in spiritual education. And it's true. It's true. I've seen it over and over again. People that leave and come back, or people that start up spiritual life and like within days it's whoop, and then that's it. They're just picking up where they left off in their previous life, and then they hit the ceiling, and that's it. Now it's work. That's true. Any spiritual advancement we make in this life, it stays with the soul. Permanent bank account. That's a good investment. Okay? Stay with the process. And you'll see, incrementally, there's some ups and downs. The sine curve program does happen, but you can experience that there's spiritual progress. This is one of the yardsticks of spiritual progress, this other topic. That I get a definite sense of there's some connection with Krishna that's happening. It's not just me, because it was just me, but it's happening because there's some assist from Krishna. There's some spiritual potency in this very simple activity of chanting. I don't feel the same before when I wasn't chanting as how I feel now. It's just not the same. And so forth. Are you in the program of rising early in the morning? Was it something that you were doing before? And how do you feel? Does it it feels different. Maybe in the beginning, but after your body gets adjusted to the hour, it feels different. And so forth. Prasadam instead of whatever the other stuff is that's out here. It's different. So those are all etc. All those spiritual assets help one in this process of remembering. Okay, it's all purification. The remembrance is not just a mechanical exercise I'm emphasizing. It's an awakening of the dormant consciousness of the soul.
Doesn't the benefits of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga also carry on to the next point? there is also some yoga there.
There is, yes. But it's not a one-to-one correlation. It's not like, you know, the knowledge that one had in one's previous life as a gyan yogi, immediately that knowledge is there in your next life. But certainly the propensity for gyan endures. And to whatever degree there's attraction for knowledge of the Supreme, that will also be restored. But not the knowledge itself. But whereas in the life of devotion, the devotion itself is restored very quickly, as soon as there's contact, once again, with devotional service. Okay. Thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada.